Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Yes, it's November the 4th, 2013. This is Journeys with myself, JP, on Revolution Radio, Studio B, Wolf Spirit Radio, and No Borders Radio. Yes, right now we're on No Borders Radio. I just managed to connect. That's great. So welcome, everybody. Tonight on Journeys, we have a regular and very special guest. And I was just trying to stall a little bit to make sure that when I connected to the Skype call there, he was. He's a dear friend. We often banter together, and so anything that I say to him, you mustn't take as I'm being nasty to him. We love him. Thomas Hughes, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you, JP?
Ah, you're that good, huh? You as good as me?
I don't know if I'm as good as you, but I'm fair enough.
Fair to middling, as we say.
There you go.
In Britain. So, how are you today? What's the news from over in Tejas?
Oh, it's raining here. It has rained today, and it's getting cooler. But there's a couple of people here in Texas that I'm working with on their Sasquatch interaction. And I was able to contact one of them, after you got off the call with me about an hour ago. And, it's been very interesting, having all this go on. Hence why I retired from Wolf Spirit Radio back in, January of this year.
Exactly, because, you know, I mean, in a way, my own life has kind of expanded a little bit in the same way that, you know, I'm not able to spend so much time, on the net and doing all these things because I've got a life, you know, so you've taken your Sasquatch experience and knowledge and actually kind of taken it on the road, so to speak, haven't you?
Yes, I was, basically, I was called away from doing a radio show because the volume, like on a stereo or radio, the volume on the work I was doing was about to be turned up. So I just felt that. If you would like to put this link in the chat room for people to read, that is the blog my friend is doing with his own experiences there with Sasquatch. So share that if you'd like to.
Okay, I'm just dropping that in there. Yes. So, there we go. I've just plopped that in there.
Okay.
So, good evening, everybody, in the two chat rooms of Wolf Spirit Radio. Basically, I've got software called IRC, which talks to. I can talk to both Revolution Radio and Wolf Spirit Radio at the same time. But then, No Borders Radio is on a separate. A separate website that I have to click in. But if anybody's got questions, I'm sure Thomas will be very happy to field any answers. Those who've not come across Thomas before, you will learn gradually that Thomas has he's very special.
Thank you.
You've got superhuman mental. No, not really particularly super. Actually, you know, this is, let's go back a bit. One of my big stories at the moment is this whole kind of, humanity's been messed with 50,000 years ago story. And what I believe has happened is that the beings who were originally telepathic and therefore very harmonic, there were no secrets obviously, were kind of mechanically reduced to only being able to follow verbal commands. So it's basically we've been turned into kind of remote controlled robots instead of amazing telepathic beings. That's just my idea, but that seems to me to be what happened to us, that we can't hear telepathy anymore. We still give it out, but we can't hear it. We only respond to spoken verbal commands. How close to, this is just my own crazy idea. I mean, how close to what you've been told, and you can introduce yourself to the audience by talking about the kind of people that you talk to, and what the outcome of that story is.
Well, one of the things that was going on is that there was a war raging across four different galaxies. This was the last galaxy that it came to, basically. And when I say war, I use that term loosely because it's a term that people tend to understand, or they comprehend it much more readily than they would say a distortion. But there were distortions going on, or a war that was raging across four galaxies, and it was agreed upon by all parties involved that the final resolution of all that was going on would be resolved on 13 planets in this galaxy, since this was the last galaxy that it arrived at. So, we didn't shy away from that, because we're all a part of the Source. These physical skin suits or bodies that we live in are just that. They are a vessel of sorts. They are not who we are. That's why James Cameron movie's Avatar was so timely, because it was to help people begin to wake up that were ready to wake up or that wanted to. But yes, when all this started, we invited them in, and yes, we spoke telepathically, is the word that can be used. We did not have a need to verbally communicate. And there were no secrets, because when somebody thought something, everybody in the immediate vicinity heard that thought. And so there were no secrets. But us being from Source, just like them, we did not shy away from this. And we invited them in with the invitation of, come, test us. And I must say that over the last 25,920 years, they have done an excellent job of testing us, with their end goal, or their agenda, to be to separate us from Source. And they have been unable to do so. Try as they might, and honestly, as bad as things seem right now, if this is the best they can do, how pathetic. Okay, enough said.
Great story, thank you very much, Thomas. So, the result of four galaxies trying to make peace with each other. So, do we know who's who? From which galaxy is which being? Presumably, we're all talking humanoids. Or are we?
Different forms of life that express themselves in different ways. As I understand it, or as I am aware of it, Source decided that it wanted to experience all that it could, obviously. And so, to make that happen, or to have it happen even faster in continuous moments of now, it placed many of us in what you would call the positive realms. And it placed many fragments of itself in what you would call the negative realms. Well, the two did not come together in balance, as was designed. The two came together in conflict, because one was better than the other. No, I'm better than you. No, I'm better than you. And this war began to spread from one galaxy to the next, and then on to the next. One of the things that happened was, I don't know if anyone's ever heard before of the 144,000 entities of light here on this planet. These are refugees that came from the star system Lyra, because they did not want to be part of the war or the conflict that was going on between positive and negative sides. So they came here to live in balance. And so the war eventually arrived on their doorstep here at this planet, and they were ill-equipped to handle said conflict, because the Lyran people said, fine, if you don't want to be part of the we and contribute to bringing this all back to balance, we're going to take all your technology away and leave you there on that planet. Well, then the war arrived here, and they said, well, we can't really leave ourselves there, because they're part of the we can't leave ourselves there going through this without any assistance. So all the different races of the cosmos, different life forms, got together, and they agreed on an experiment that is going across 13 different planets, this being one of those 13. And that's how this whole experiment started.
Right, so those Lyrans, mm-hmm. Are the... So there was a war going... But I thought the war started with the Lyra being attacked. So was it like the people who didn't want to fight back, they just like, rather than fight, they step aside and let them have the planet, you know, if they wanted to. But it seems like these people are real hippies, aren't they?
Yeah, in a sort of, in a manner of speaking, yes, I guess you could relate to that.
In the sense of like, you know, there's better ways of living than being in conflict all the time.
Well, yes. The negative side really wanted to have this conflict because they felt they were better. They did not remember how to come back into balance. It would be like, 150-pound kid being on one side of the seesaw, 100-pound kid being on the other side of the seesaw. I'm better than you because I weigh more than you. Watch how much faster you fly off the seesaw. And that's where the conflict began, in a manner of speaking.
So, if we want to take it to that, it's pride that is the blockage here. Pride is what causes the separation. I'm bigger, I'm different from you. I'm better than you.
That would be accurate.
So, how do we heal pride? If it comes down to that, which is the problem, then the solution is the opposite of pride, isn't it?
Yes, it would be.
Yeah.
But trying to get people to understand this, or to be aware of it, is quite the challenge.
Hmm. Well, even just realizing that you're subject to pride. I shared with you a video this afternoon of Dolores Cannon, and her story that she says is very similar to this. You know, there seems to be a very strong common thread that, you know, something happened in Lyra, Lyran people came here, and then various other people. So who arrived to mess up the Lyran's lives?
Well, the negative side would be, I guess you would, reptilians would be a word I would use, the Draco, the Hydra, and there were others involved as well. The Archons, were certainly a part of that. Go on.
That's interesting. Last night I was talking to Nikki Fetzi on Ever Beyond, and one of the things she was saying was that, she was talking about the archons, and the image that I got were of necrotic bacteria. You know the kind of creatures that, when something is rotten, has rotted, there's creatures, bacteria, that eat that rot, and they turn it into, you know, hummus or taramasalata or whatever. But they turn it into a food, yes, from the necrosis, the death of some biological. And what it seems like is that the archons are an intelligent version of that on a larger scale. Is that something right?
The archons would be probably around a seventh dimensional being, you know, if we're going to talk dimensions or vibration levels. And so they are the ones that we invited in to test us. There is some unfortunate aspects of that. However, we did not shy away from it. So yes, that would be an accurate dissertation of what the archons are. They are parasitic in nature.
Yeah, because their design is like the, you know, like phagocytes or something like that, that eat up the dead material. It's a cleaners. You know, it's like marching ants that clean up villages as they walk through them.
Yes, and the thing that was not realized by them until recently, I would say. Basically, the last two or three years, many of them began to come to balance. When I say balance, I'm not saying what I'm saying, or if I can get the words to come out of my mouth, blah, 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 blah. Basically, they saw that it is best to be in balance between positive and negative. So they came out of that whole negative aspect and came back to balance. And amazingly, there have been quite a few archons that have been helping us wrap this whole experiment up. Because there are archons that do not want to give up what they've been able to manifest for themselves here in this reality. All I can say for those individuals is that they are going somewhere where they will find that they are not the biggest fish in the pond.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's when they have to deal with their karma. Because obviously they took to their job a little too enthusiastically. So it's gonna be issues for them as well. Or have they already suffered that?
Well, if you wanna use an analogy, it would be like a great white shark. You know what they look like and how big they can be. All of a sudden, the great white shark finds itself in a different body of water. And right there beside it is a megalodon. You know what that is, right?
Presumably that's something big enough to make this great white shark look like a kipper.
A megalodon looks like a great white shark, except that it's about the size of a blue whale.
You see, I've got this thing about the universe, is that it scales. It's got the same creature on different scales.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So there are, and the human beings, or what we call humans, Earth humans, are, from what I understand, rather short, rather small, little toy versions of, you know, like you got the poodle, you got the toy poodle. Well, the humans are like toy, Anunnaki or whoever designed it. So the Lyrans, were they originally... they are large because they live in the Hollow Earth. Yeah, what happened to the Lyrans? Let's talk... I'm assuming that the Lyrans arrived and formed Lemuria, because that seems to be the sort of vibration of the beings. Is that right?
Yes, it was called the Land of Mu. But of course that was co-opted because their technology was taken away from them by their own people. They were essentially stranded here. And as a result, the negative side, or the reptilians, Draco, Hydra, Archons, that sort of thing, those beings, came here and they broke Moldauk into an asteroid belt, which is now the Kuiper's belt. They basically ripped the atmosphere and the water off of Mars, and it came here. And this was no longer just a planet of land, it was also a planet of water. And so, because they did not have their technology to defend themselves, things that they were doing here was co-opted by the reptilians, and essentially Lemuria was sunk. Sunk, S-U-N-K, sunk. And that's why there's the Pacific Ocean where it is. Along come the Atlanteans, the indigenous life form that was here, otherwise known as Indians or Native Americans. And that also was co-opted. And that's when the Lyrans and Assyrians and the Arcturians and Pleiadians and a whole host of others that we don't even know the names of came here and said, okay, it's time to put this nonsense to rest. We've come to balance in three of the galaxies. It's the only one left. It's time to do an experiment here and get this show on the road, because we're tired of this, and so are you. So, that's why the experiment was set up between 13 different planets. And I want to say that you sent me that Dolores Cannon video today, and I had not seen that before today. I'd only seen bits and pieces of it that were included in something else, so I had not seen the majority of it, or the whole of it. And you're right, you're quite right. She validated a lot of the things that I've been saying for, what, 2 years now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, good on you. And keep going.
And so it was nice that you sent that to me, and it was very timely, if I might say so, because with all the things that are happening in my life at the moment and continue to go on, it was something that I cherish, because there was validation in that video that I had not expected or looked for or even asked for. So, much appreciation to you.
Hey, you're very welcome. The video in question, if you want to search for it, let me see if I can find it. It's on YouTube, of course, and it's called Dolores Cannon, C-A-N-N-O-N, presents Moving into the New Earth. It's on the UFO Media Videos channel. So that's Dolores Cannon presents Moving into the New Earth. That's the name, that's the title you search for. And absolutely fascinating. It's a little slow at the beginning. She talks very much about her grounded world and what she does. You know, this is, she's a, if anybody's not familiar with Dolores Cannon, and I would recommend getting familiar with her work, is that she's a professional hypnotist. She, you know, not a stage hypnotist, but somebody who, you know, cures people of cigarette smoking and, you know, bad relationships and, well, I don't know if we can do that, you know, fat and, you know, and she would basically hypnotize, do the work, and she would ask people's permission if she could. She had her special routine that she would do at the end of every reading, and what she would do is she would speak to a kind of spirit guide group, she calls they, as many people do, that I think that the ancient Hebrew word for they is Elohim, but anyway, that's another thing. That's why there's so many Elohims, because it just means they. But the interesting thing is that she would speak to this voice that had the same kind of accent and everything, and same characteristics, no matter who she was speaking with. She would you know, zoom people down into the theta level, plug them into cosmic consciousness, and she would use them like a telephone. It's just amazing. Anyway, so she would have these conversations, and they would download information and all sorts of things. But one of the fascinating things was that she said was that she would also regress her patients to other lives. And what she's discovered, that overall, we're put here on Earth to experience everything, to be everything. We are rocks, we are algae, we are bacteria, we are ears of corn, we are cats, dogs, wolves, foxes, sweet peppers, cucumbers, courgettes, potatoes, everything, trees, plants, plants in general, animals in general, and but she was talking about the way they were seeing things. And that's the thing that I found most fascinating. Did you enjoy that part, Thomas? What was your take
on it? I especially enjoyed the part where she talked about a man who remembered when he was part of the air. Because the air beings, the elementals, were responsible when this planet was being formed for cleaning ammonia out of the atmosphere.
That was, what kind of being can you imagine? That's an unimaginable being, isn't it? Exactly. A kind of phage, again, kind of energy transforming creature. This is what we do, isn't it? We transform energy.
Well, yes, and I can imagine that to some degree because, right there in Chronicles of Riddick, there was a elemental and she was an air elemental. And she said, no, we do not fly, but we glide very well. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Ah, no, I don't remember that one. That's beautiful, though. Yeah, I mean, this is something that we think that the air is a homogeneous kind of mixture of gases. But really, now we're learning that the universe is conscious, and everything is conscious, everything, that even that the air is a collective being of many different possible species of air being. Wouldn't that
one
be
of the
true?
Things, yes, one of the things they showed me that I can speak about is they were showing me patterns last year. And said, okay, they said, what patterns of energy consist or make the human body? What, all four elements are there, can you identify them? I said, well, certainly. I said, the flesh is made from the earth, because primarily we eat plants. Even if we're eating hamburger, what did the cow eat before we ate the cow? Plants. It ate grass or grains or feed that is now GMO'd and whatnot. Anyway, so I discussed that with them. They said, you are quite correct. That is the earth. What else in the earth? I said, obviously iron. It is what gives blood its red color. And blood. What about blood? I said, that's water. I correct again. Do you know the difference between hemoglobin in the human body and chlorophyll in a plant? I said, the iron content is the only difference. Correct. I said, okay. Well, what else can you tell us? I said, oxygen. Because we breathe air, and the oxygen content of the planet is 17%. So we breathe air. That goes into the lungs. That gives oxygen to the flesh. So there's three elements. Right. And you're missing one element. Fire. How does that work? I said, the pattern of fire. Well, it explains why we're thermic. Yes, it does. But how does that work? Let's get down to the really root level of this. I said, well, before I stab myself in the foot, ask me a question and I will answer it. What is the slowest burn on the planet? I said, the slowest burn on the planet is rust. He said, correct. And why is it rust? I said, because there is so little oxygen content within the atmosphere of Earth when metal, iron in particular, oxidizes or interacts with oxygen, it rusts. That's why you can take a pure oxygen bottle from a hospital, put a hose on it, and spray it on a piece of iron, and you will have an 1800 degree flame coming off that iron, because the iron is burning that hot and that fast with that much oxygen. And it said, okay, and how do these, let's discuss the patterns more. How does that lead into the human body? I said, oh boy, here we go. Now you're making me look and see. Okay, we breathe oxygen. The oxygen is put into the blood cells. The oxygen interacts with the iron that is in the blood cells, and you have the slowest burn on the planet, which is why you're thermic, correct? And I said, yes, that's why we're thermic, because the iron in our blood is burning while it's in contact with the oxygen. But what happens when the oxygen is depleted? It comes back through the lungs, and it gets exhaled as carbon dioxide. And where does that go? I said, into the plants. Again, the plants breathe it, don't they? And I said, yes, I do. They don't have any iron in their chlorophyll, so it goes to different uses. But it comes out as oxygen, and you breathe it. I said, yes, that's quite correct. So those are the four elements in the human body. We are the fifth element that gives that human body life. And the powers that were, with all their cloning and everything else that they've done, have never been able to produce a human body through cloning that existed on its own without a soul. We are the fifth element that gives life to these human bodies, and it's a small, small fragment. And we're talking 5% of who we really are is in these bodies.
So, I completely agree, and what a beautiful poetic journey through the cycle of nature there, Thomas, of the elements. That was really beautiful. I saw all the pictures with that. And yeah, the realization, it's interesting that I'm sitting here in my living room and I've got a wood burning stove in my living room. Okay, and I'm burning wood in a casing of iron. And yet the iron is not consumed.
Right. There's not enough oxygen to catch the iron on fire.
But enough for the carbon to burn. Carbon burns obviously a lot quicker than iron.
Yes.
Interesting. And ash is the silica that's left, isn't it?
Yes, and if we all had wood content in our blood, we would simply burn up on the spot, wouldn't we?
Mm. Yeah, it's a good thing we've not got wood aglobin. So here we are. We're the... And it's also interesting is that if you're... I always notice that some people, don't breathe properly and are always cold. And that if ever I feel cold, I just start breathing for a while. And what you just said made total sense of why I feel warmer when I start breathing, is because I'm giving oxygen into the burning of the iron in my hemoglobin. So,
yes.
So
there is something else that goes along with being in these human bodies. We are electrical beings. We know that electricity exists on this planet without any need for power generation or anything else. I'm sure everyone has had the experience of walking across the carpet on a dry day and they reach for a door handle and they get static electricity that shocks them. Mm-hmm. And so, One of the things that the powers that were have done so succinctly is they put rubber soles on all of our shoes, essentially cutting us off from any electron flow from the planet. Instead of having wooden soles or leather soles or anything of that nature, we now have rubber soles, and rubber, as everyone knows, insulates against electricity. So one of the best antioxidants in the world is taking your shoes off and putting your bare feet right on the ground. There is a PhD who has done research on this, and if anyone would like to see that, they can go to YouTube and put in human metabolism meets cosmic metabolism, and you'll see the video. It's only about 5 minutes long.
Well, on my show last week, Ever Beyond, with Clayton Nolte, and, you know, we're really tying up this bag of nuggets. It's great. We got a good bag of nuggets. It was the Russians, and they have a machine. Of course, the Russians have a machine. They have all these machines because they like their machines. And it's probably, you know, big and industrial and not covered in plastic, but with a, you know, big gray metal case. But anyway, they have a machine which the ability to measure the energy on all of your subtle body systems. You know, it's a really quantized thing. You know, they just got all the numbers, and it will reduce your astral body, your etheric body, your mental body. It sees them all, and it just gives a registration of, you know, what's wrong, or, you know, how healthy they are. And, of course, the Russians have got this kind of thing because they've been investigating it out in the public, whereas the CIA and the NSA have been doing it in secret and using it against us. Great, yes. Anyway, meanwhile, what they discovered was that if there was it, and they used them on their athletes and on their, you know, their people, you know, it was a really, you know, really, really down-to-earth machine, if you like, you know, because this is what the story is about. Anyway, so what they found is that, you know, anybody who was out of action, you know, for any reason, they would measure the thing. And you know what the cure was? Go outside and stand on the lawn.
You know, I just want to say that I find it rather ironic and a bit humorous that since the Iron Curtain was lifted, so many things have come out of Russia. And that Iron Curtain must have been rubber.
That's right. Rubberized iron.
That's right.
Interesting how you can make iron. The other fascinating thing about iron, right, which is, you know, taking this whole cycle that we've just been discussing, is that iron is the result of stars. That when stars become, you know, sort of spent, they basically become hot lumps of iron.
Yes.
So what we're seeing is that hydrogen is consumed or is fused in stars to become iron, which becomes our bloodstream. And we're just about to get a huge iron deposit onto the planet in the form of all these meteors that we're going through, right? Because iron is the middle of planets. So is iron that part of the consciousness of the universe? Is it what I'm saying here, Thomas, is iron the condensation of the galactic consciousness?
An interesting question that I don't know that anyone has ever figured out, because quite simply put, to simplify things, we are never supposed to figure it out until we go back to source.
Oh, and then, well, of course, let's go tomorrow then.
Well, exactly. And then the bitch of that if I may use that language, and I apologize if I offended anyone, which I know is putting you in anaphylactic shock at the moment, JP, because I actually apologize.
The crux
of it is this. If we ever leave Source, we forget all of it. Or most of it. We don't forget all of it. We forget most of it. We have to go back to Source and be a we, the ultimate we, before we know everything again. That is how eternity or infinity, how it operates. We never know all the answers because how boring, and I'm going to say it again, how boring is eternity? If we know everything, can you imagine how bored you'd be if you knew everything?
If I have iron and carbon, if I combine this star material and plant material and make it into a wire, I can stretch it across a piece of wood and I can play a guitar. So I like iron. I like steel. Chem just said, a giant condom over the country of USSR. Very good. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. So Dr. Will's hand scanner does very similar things to said Russian machine. Yeah. So, and also, yeah, Chem's coming up with some very... the iron is very Martian. That's guess who says this? Yeah, Wolfgang. Anyway, bless your heart. The answer seems to answer why spontaneous human combustion can happen. Yeah, imagine if you hyperventilate. Maybe that's why we shouldn't hyperventilate, because we'll start burning.
Some of those souls were able to tap into some of those things we are not supposed to know, and they tried to bring energy into this reality. That they probably shouldn't have, being at this slow or low of frequency. And that energy essentially burned up the bodies that they were living in. That's why the body is burned, but very little around it is burned at all.
Yeah. Yes. Iron. Again, Trem is saying iron is definitely an odd substance, a metal that can be shaped almost by hand with no tools. Yeah, and then you can make tools that can shape other things with the iron. I mean, iron is quite an interesting material. If we look at how Egyptians regarded iron, that they regarded things that came in meteors as gifts from the gods, which I suppose in one way you could look at it like that, that it is... All right, so you know, here's the thing, right? Hydrogen is like one atom. It's one electron, one proton. That's it. That's the most basic thing that it is. And as soon as it gets neutrons, it becomes helium, which, interestingly enough, has an IUM at the end of it. So actually, helium is a metal. You know, in terms of what defines a non-metal and what defines a metal. It's definitely on the metal side of the periodic table. Helium and these things are condensed and fused in the plasma arc that is a star. And a star has consciousness. And so the manifestation of that consciousness has to be the resulting iron. It's the traveling down from the pure thought down into the dense material. And you can't get, you know, well, you can get denser than iron, but iron is, you know, it's like pretty, it's a base level density matter. You use it to weigh things down. So, we can look at iron as part of the cosmic consciousness, a fragment of the cosmic consciousness. And then we say, you know, what is soul? And, you know, scientists have always been trying to find the seat of the soul. And a few years ago, it's an old philosophical question. You know, where does the soul reside in the body? Is it in the head? Is it in the heart? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, yes, definitely, it's definitely in the heart. But I believe it's the bloodstream that is the seat of the soul.
Here's something that is very interesting. We live in carbon-based bodies. And you're well aware of how they turned that around on us. Because religion said the mark of the beast is 666. Well, if you look at the human life form, six protons, six electrons, and six neutrons make the carbon atom. So 666. We are the beast. All of us have the mark of the beast. They're talking about humanity. It was one of their ways of testing us and turning us against ourselves. Very effective for the time. But here's what they had hoped would never happen. And Tulloch talks about this. He brought this information. As we go through this transformation, our bodies will essentially be crystalline based. Okay? Now, to support what he's saying, or to subsidize what he's saying, we know that if you put enough pressure on a piece of coal, which is carbon-based, it becomes a diamond. And I think it might be fair to say at this time that we have undergone so much pressure during this whole experiment, we are definitely going to come out little bitty diamonds on the other side of this. How's that for a theory, JP? How do you like that?
In London, we use the term diamond geezer for a really good bloke, fine person, fine man, good bloke. Diamonds are regarded, there's so much more than their beauty. The properties of diamond. You know, you can burn diamond like coal if you ever wanted to.
Yes.
And, you know, they're starting to use... Well, but diamond is the crystalline form of carbon, basically.
Yes.
And so, what we're talking about is that we could be literally... having diamond as our bone structure? Is that what we're talking about?
I would imagine it would be somewhere along the lines of the structure of our entire human body. And if it is the same in size relative to the atoms that make our body now, we would vaguely even notice that things have changed when they first change. So it would be a smooth... as it is right now. Obviously, it would not need the same things. We would not have to consume food in the same manner or drink water in the same manner that we do now. And so I really doubt that we would even notice. Although our hairs may be like porcupine quills if they're all diamond hardness.
Well, maybe they're more like carbon fiber.
There you go.
I could do with carbon fiber hair. My hair's more like a spider's web.
You know, the more we're definitely in the time of revelations, what the Bible talks about. And the reason I say that, and you know I don't go by anything of the Bible, but if you think about the base word that revelations comes from, it comes from reveal. We're talking about the past tense, so it's revealment. When you have a whole lot of revealments, naturally you would call it revelations. So, how many things are being revealed right now, JP?
My scalp. Sorry, back to the hair thing. My perception of this revelation thing is that, yes, we're in the time of revelation, and what is being revealed is the nature of the archonic world that we've been subjected to. But, so many people are so convinced that the archonic world is the real world that we're having a difficult time convincing everybody to stop walking in the, you know, along the clock tick of the archonic world. So, I also think that their world is coming to an end, because daddy's come home, kind of thing, or daddy's coming home, wait till your father gets home, we have a caller. So I believe that, you know, things are coming around full circle. And, I can add you to the group call. Hello. Oh, he's gone. Where'd he go? I have people to...
Did you hang up on him?
No. He, called. Try again in a minute, big man. Apparently. Here we go. Don't know. That's not happening. We'll see if we can bring him in. And add him to the call. Oh, well, there, you did add you. Oh, you have to, until they accept your contact request. You have to accept my contact request, Wingman. So that'll get us in. So where were we? We were talking about stuff. Atoms, diamonds, and our movement into people talk about crystalline bodies, you know, and all sorts of crystals. There's silicon crystal, and as we've just been talking about, carbon crystal, diamond. What about iron crystal? What do iron crystals look like?
You know, I don't have details or information on that, so I couldn't answer with any degree of honesty on that. It would simply be speculation.
All right. Okay, well, let's see. So what I have to do now is I have to find Wingman and do a friend request on him. Request. And try and get him back in there. So
I just want to say at this time, with everything that we're going through and experiencing and revealments are being revealed to us almost daily now, I would like to encourage everyone to go back and watch the movie Avatar, because there are a lot of revealments that took place in that movie. So my applause to James Cameron for being both timely and accurate with this movie, as well as entertaining.
Yeah, because that had a profound effect on a lot of people, didn't it? People were, you know, like going into depression because they didn't live in, where was it? Pandora.
Yes, Pandora's box.
Yeah. So, we have a call-in guest. Wingman, speak to us.
Wow, I'm kind of blown away by the conversation at the moment. It's stuff that's been on my mind for a while, and I've only ever talked about with one individual with regards to the, you know, stars being conscious and what they produce, and to some extent the you know, iron like a lion in Zion and what the elements that produce kind of thing. But I was wanting to ask what you thought. One of the things that fascinated me about the elemental table, and I agree with, you know, much of what you're saying, and I want to talk about compression in a second, if I'm going to ask your opinion about that. But, I've often thought, is the elemental table itself and the elements within it working towards something? And is it hierarchical, as, you know, one element wants to become another element, and so, and what's the final element that the elements within the elemental table want to become? Because I think there's levels of consciousness within it all. And, you know, it's little things like, you know, why, like, pyrite. Have you ever heard of pyrite, for example?
Yes, iron pyrites, which is a cubic, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, why does that want to be a cube? You know, and it's a brilliant, I've got one on my table, actually, and it's a very kind of accurate cube.
They're beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah.
But if you look at them very closely, they have these little cubet, tiny little edges. I look at that thing and I think, Borg.
Yes, the Borg. Well, this thing's like, the edges are quite accurate and sharp, like, you know?
Yeah.
And I think of, like, sugar and salt and things like this, and it's like, you know, sometimes I wonder whether that's obviously the, you know, some sort of equilibrium for that element that's that crystallizes, like, with salt, for example.
The science of crystallography.
Yeah.
It's basically how things are stacked together. You know, so if you have atoms that are round and you threw them into a jar and you jiggled the jar a bit, they'd all settle down into a particular form, and that actually tends to be whether the and like each atom is like a planet, so it's got a north and a south pole. Have you got any of those little magnetic spheres?
Neodymium magnets. Very powerful, yeah.
Yeah, well, if you want to, I mean, this is a very interesting little thing. Is that you can? They're puzzles, and I don't think you can buy them anymore because people keep on swallowing the bloody things, and children swallow them. But they are incredible learning tools because they act just like atoms, and so the way you stack them together magnetically, you can create these different forms that become So this is how salt stacks. This is how iron stacks, and this is the science of crystallography.
Yeah. It just fascinates me. It's like the thing wants, that's the state that thing, element, you know, wants to become. And it's like, and then, it, you know, if it sheds an atom here and there, whatever, it, you know, whatever element it be, often there's this spurt of radiation that's released in that process as it exchanges with some, you know, or some sort of exchange takes place. But it's the radiation burst that intrigues me. Where's that coming from?
Right, well, in a minute we're going to talk about that, or in a little while, because we're going to go to a break now. Don't go away. Stay here. We're on Journeys. We've got Wingman. We've got Thomas Hughes. We might have you. Call in. Meanwhile, somewhere on the edge of a galaxy, in the middle of a large cluster of galaxies, on the edge of a spiral arm of an even larger galactic conglomeration that looks like a galaxy. Somewhere in a galaxy. Right on the edge of this one. Here we are in the outer suburbs. We're really kind of on the, near the rim of a large galaxy. And, Let's start with this idea. Actually, no. Let's finish your idea, Wingman. If you've managed to hold your focus throughout the break, do you want to come back in and complete your story?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it seems to be something with regards to the solidity and the almost instantaneous conversion process between atomic states, and that there's a radiation release every time it happens. And it makes me wonder, well, where's all that energy coming from? Because, like, if you look at the atom bomb, there's masses of energy coming when all that's released. And it's like, part of me thinks it's coming from someplace else as opposed to just within the atom itself. I'm inclined to think at the center of an atom, I think it's something to do with expansion, holographic expansion through the atom, the nucleus of the atom, so that when that exchange takes place, momentarily it's like a door opening, and that burst of the hologram coming out is the radiation. I don't know, I'm just reaching at straws here, but because, you know, I haven't been able to explain it to myself, but or hear it elsewhere. I mean, Nassim Haramein says, you know, that he talks about a mini black hole at the center of the atom. Which would make sense. That would, you know, pertain to the holographic nature, I guess. So maybe that's what it's about. Maybe the shield, you know, the structure is the shield. So like the crystalline form is the shield, or whatever form the atom settles in is shielded in that form. And when an exchange takes place or a catalyst takes place, the shifting is like opening the gate door. And as that happens, it's like, whoa, you know, it's, you're blinded by the energy coming out or released, and then the doors close and everything reshuffles again and settles down to equilibrium of sorts. I don't know, what do you think?
Well, you're going in the right direction there. Now, who was it I was talking to? It's escaped me who I was talking to. Maybe one of my listeners might remind me. But it might have even been David Wilcock on something or some. Anyway, that each atom, as it builds up in the periodic table, has a geometric form. Okay, so let's break it right down. You know, let's look at protons, neutrons, electrons. We're taught that they spin, so they must be round. It doesn't necessarily mean spinning as like a ball around the roulette table. It could be like a cloud moving across the face of a surface, for instance. You know, there are other forms of movement. Now, we then look at what does sound do if you put sound on a plate. And you put sand on that plate or powder.
Right.
You've seen all these things.
Yeah, cymatics.
Yeah. So we get a chymoglyph for each frequency. Now, that is only a two-dimensional slice of a three-dimensional form, maybe multi-dimensional form. Right?
Yeah.
You getting me? Now, everything vibrates. All vibration is frequency. All frequency creates chymoglyphic forms. Are you following me?
Yeah.
So,
well, obviously it's hard for us to perceive that using oscilloscopes and technology like that.
What you'd need is some kind of smoke. Maybe you could do it in a smoke chamber.
Yeah.
Make a little smoke chamber, and that would, here's an experiment for people, you know. Let's make, I'm sure somebody's gotta have done it. Anyway, so what happens, and what I guarantee is you'd see these amazing three-dimensional geometric forms.
And that geometric, the 3D visual of that geometry would be the solid, I guess.
That's what the crystal would look like because what they are stacked up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah? Oh, of course, yeah.
Making sense? So the structure of each atom, basically is like, platonic solids.
Right.
Yeah? And each shell is not a sphere, it's a platonic solid.
Exactly. Right.
So it's the conditioning
that makes me say sphere. So.
Yeah. This is the conditioning that they put into our heads. Let's take that conditioning away and let's say that an atom is more like a tetrahedron inside a cube, inside a rhombus, inside a rhomboid, inside a dodecahedron inside an icosahedron. Now we're talking. And that each of those node points is what we call a proton.
Ooh, a thought's just come to mind.
Go ahead.
And it's hurting.
Get out. Let it come out, otherwise it'll just hurt you.
Ouch. That makes me think that the environment outside of an atom to the atom is hostile, hence the nature of the solid, the harmonic cymatic structure, if you like, or is that really cymatic the right word to use? Is that the word to use?
Chymatic. Is the science of visualization of sound.
Okay,
it's what we're talking about. So we're starting off with consciousness becoming sound. In the beginning was the word. Sound becoming geometric form.
Yeah.
and combinations of these geometric forms becoming solid matter. Now, but that's what the Archons told John Dee to do, is figure that lot out. That's why the idea was, how do you turn energy into matter?
May I say something on that?
Yes, you may, my friend.
In reference to what you just discussed and described, I would say, as hokey a movie as it may seem to people, I would say that the movie John Carter is an accurate representation of what you just discussed.
You know, I have been trying to find that movie online, and damned if I can. If anybody's got a copy of it, would they rip it and email it to me or something? I don't know. If anybody's out there that's got a copy of the DVD of John Carter of Mars, I would love to watch it. Please share it with me.
Maybe I'll sort you out a streaming link maybe later. But should be able to come up with one.
Thank you.
Let me go completely crazy.
Go ahead. Let's go out there. This is the journey. And I tell you, this journey is to the center of the galaxy and back. Thank you.
Okay. Crazy theories are one of my specialities.
Mad ideas are the best ones.
Okay. So here is how, one of the ways that we are all beings of light. Okay. We know what makes up an atom. Beings of light.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. We know that an atom is composed of protons, neutrons, and electrons. The protons and the neutrons are what form the nucleus of the atom. And the electrons circulate, as science describes it, around the nucleus of the atom, the protons and the electrons, which are positive and neutrally charged particles of the atom. Okay, and the electrons are the negatively charged particles. But they rotate around that atom at what speed? The speed of light.
I thought it was close to the speed of light. Do we know?
I'm not sure. What does science say about that?
Well, it's close to the speed of light, I think.
Here's the thing. The nature of reality appears to be a dual rotation reality. That means that things are rotating clockwise and anti-clockwise at the same time. That is the nature. There's a book, it's called A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. It's one of the thickest books you can get. Like 700 very thin pages. And it's part of the Alice Bailey series that was dictated. Anyway, it's full of ancient history. And ancient knowledge, and like, you can't read one paragraph. It's just incomprehensible stuff. But they have a picture of what they call the permanent atom. And the permanent atom is the thing that locks you into the world. You know, when you're born, that's the permanent atom. This permanent atom lives either in the egg or the sperm, I don't know where. But whatever it is, it's like, it's us. You know, the part of us that hooks onto the earth. And this permanent atom is comprised of, it's like threads that are held together in spiral forms that looks like a heart. How cool is that?
That reminds me of called Dan Winter and his work with regards to
Dan Winter. He's a student of the same stuff.
Okay, the heart harmonics, and he does this all this geometry with regards to the DNA and how it's spat out of the heart through sound, through the heartbeat. The heartbeat creates the momentum to create the spiral, so to speak, and the emerging waveform has something to do with it. What he thinks is the Holy Grail, because when you look at the geometry of the structure of to do with the heart harmonics, he's come about with this geometry that looks like a cup when you move it around. Like, so yeah, I don't know, it's hard to say. But I like his work. He's a bit crazy, but I quite like his work.
Okay, well, you ready for the crazy theory part?
Go ahead, Tom.
What if God looked at itself and said, just like the movie Tron, I wanted to make an exact copy of myself, the exact opposite of myself, and so God created a proton, it decided to be the proton, and it created an electron, and the two were swimming around each other, looking for a weak spot to attack, and the entire fabric of existence is made of God swimming around itself, the electron around the proton, and it needed a referee, so it created a neutron. How's that for a crazy theory? Does that work for you?
It's not bad. That's
quite
not
an
bad.
Interesting theory.
I mean, it's a lot better than some of the crap that we're told in school. This is more fun. Wingman.
I was just going to say, firstly, I love not just frivolent theories, but theories based on good, solid arguments and logic and reasoning. And I think it's wonderful that we have that ability to, you know, to be able to go on these kind of journeys of the mind, as your title of the show suggests. And I think it's healthy as well, because you can often fill in the blank. It's like having, you know, a few pieces of a jigsaw missing, but you can tell from looking at the rest of the picture what that missing piece might look like, and that's why I quite like what we did. But, you know, I've often thought that God's a schizophrenic. I know that sounds terrible. But at some point, you know, he must have fragmented, and that fragmentation is all of us, really. And this is what's beautiful, is that we're all these different personalities of that initial source. Your hypothesis with regards to the initial splitting from a quantum point of view is interesting. I certainly wouldn't rule it out. I personally speaking, I kind of know this isn't the first universe, for starters. And the designs to do with the quantum side of things and the way things entangle and come together has been an ongoing thing throughout creations, plural. Now, the nature of this universe is very bipolar, you might say, you know, positive, negative, positron, neutron, and, you know, is that the right one? Positron, neutron? No, what's the opposite?
Electron. Positron? Electron. Positron and neutron, yeah.
There's this, you know, left and right arm, up and down, you know, it's very kind of bipolar. It makes me think that two universes collided, and because we're not experiencing bliss, and see, this is what, obviously there's consciousness all around us, and I believe that the Creator is benevolent, so why aren't we experiencing bliss? And I ask this question often, and I think two spaces collided, I think two universes collided, but one was somehow that existed out there in the you know, eternal space or medium that within which consciousness exists, was like antimatter, and it collided with the matter that was the light, and the light collided with the darkness, maybe isn't the right word, but you know what I mean, and that brought about this kind of this reality that we're experiencing now. And I think you know, it's a lot of it's a case of maybe the Creator wanted to, I mean, if it was accidental or not, I don't know, but I suspect the Creator may have wanted to work out this thing called disharmonics. You know, we were talking about harmonics of the atom earlier. Now what happens when you start messing with those harmonics, you see? And I think this is what this thing called evil is. I don't want to really go there with regards, you know, too much to, because everyone has their own interpretation of it, but I see evil as disharmonics, and if evil exists in this universe, then I see that also as disharmonics, and maybe it's a case of we're trying to work out how to deal with disharmonics, you know? So what do you think of that?
Well, I mean, think about it this way, you know? What does discord mean? Let me show you. Let me just demonstrate. You know, I always like to demonstrate.
Here we go.
I always like to pick out the old axe because I haven't played it for a couple of days. But anyway, Discord. This is Accord. Right? That's two notes. Same note. That's Accord. This is Discord.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so you could
but
be right.
How do I know that?
But Wingman, what if one galaxy was this, and another galaxy was this? Or even worse. You know?
Well, one galaxy with a note that goes with another one is just a different personality, a different emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, how do I know what you played? The second one you played was a Discord. I just knew that intuitively. No one taught me that at school. I haven't read it in a book. I haven't learnt it, but I instantly know.
Oops, and you can feel it.
Yeah.
You feel it. You feel that is in harmony. That is in accord. Interestingly, the accordion is the first instrument that everybody used to be able to tune to because it did all 12 notes. So the accordion was, that's why it's called an accordion, because everybody accords to it. Anyway.
It's the same thing with if someone hits a wrong note on a piano tune that I've never heard before, I instantly know it's a wrong note.
Yeah. Well, we have a natural feel for harmony because harmony expresses in our body, in feeling. You know?
Well, now you're coming onto flow then. Some sort of flow, intrinsic flow. Whether it's sound.
Well, it's all about frequencies because, you know, if I'm playing this accord, then what's happening is that we're getting, two medium, frequencies. Right, but as soon as I introduce the Discord, you're getting a low frequency imposed on those two. And it's like, I tell you what it sounds like, if you were to take that onto a different octave, it would sound like the Daleks. It would sound like this! Yeah?
Because
their voice is deliberately created as a Discord using a ring modulator.
But Jay, if you were to play a song that I hadn't heard of before,
yeah,
and whilst you were playing that, you got a note wrong, the next note was, you know, you knew it was wrong, and I'd perceive it as wrong, even though I wouldn't have heard. That's flow. That must be flow.
Yeah, surely. unless I'm playing Hurt by Nine Inch Nails, which goes, which is a horrible Discord.
Exactly.
The Johnny Cash one didn't have that. It didn't have that awful Discord. And that Discord, it gives you pain, and so you feel the song. You feel the hurt of that song, called Hurt.
Right, so, I guess coming back to what I was saying, maybe we're going through this experience because of the conscious Discord. And what needing to understand it, and this is why we're such good observers and so on and so forth, and this is why everybody's trying to understand the scientific world and you know, I don't know.
Are you ready for another crazy theory?
Come on, Tom.
I love crazy theories.
They're flowing tonight. We got the crazy. This is tonight's crazy theory show.
Oh, okay. All right. You know what a mosquito is, obviously.
Oh, who? I want to line up the inventor of.
Okay. All right. And you know what a mosquito hawk is, right?
No.
You seen them?
Hawk.
They look like really giant mosquitoes, but they eat mosquitoes.
Holy moly! Okay. No, I don't know about them, but yeah.
we have them over here in America. So my theory is this: is that one night there was a rather noisy battle going on near a witch's house between the vampires and the vampire hunters. And she had enough. Standing there like Bill Cosby's mother with a yardstick holding it like a samurai sword, she said, "Let the beatings begin." And she turned all the vampires into mosquitoes and all the vampire hunters into mosquito hawks. That's my theory. Enjoy.
Wow. I think I prefer the Atom one, though. But, no, that's quite good. Because they must have done something to... There must be, like, midget vampires, because we've got these midges. Midges are like mosquitoes, only smaller. But again, it's a matter of the scale of the universe. And here's another interesting thing. The scale goes up in steps. You know, there's no, like, 5 foot... Well, there are with humans. Humans are like this. You know, there are 5 foot, 5 foot one, 5 foot two, 5 foot three. There are gradations. But that's because we shag around a lot. And we've interbred quite a large extent, which is part of the plan. I think, you know, that this plan of what you were talking about before, about bringing peace to the galaxy, is a lot of it is to do with us breeding together to create a unified human being.
What do you mean by a unified human being?
Well, one that is organically a mixture of all the species of human.
Well, I just want to say, at the end of the cycle, end of the test, whatever you'd like to call it, I would say, like to say that this way of coming to a resolution and an awareness that we had lost somehow is just all effed up. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I got two taps out of that.
I've got another kind of... You were talking about compression, and... I've often wondered about the density of this world versus, say, the astral worlds, where I can walk through walls and see what's in between the walls and so on and so forth. And, you know, I don't know what you think, but when I meditate on compression, on conscious compression, it doesn't seem natural. And the reason I say that is because it's normally when I enter a state of fear or apprehension that I can feel my mind contract. And I'm just wondering what you guys think about maybe that being related, very similarly to the double slit experiment, where when you observe a photon of light going through the double slit, it collapses the waveform and it no longer acts like a wave. Or similarly, I think the same thing or similar thing happens with regards to consciousness and the energy surrounding consciousness that collapses into this kind of density that we're experiencing, maybe, or greater, when under duress. And this kind of makes me wonder, you know, when I look at the powers that ought not to be and the systems that we're a part of and the paradigm that we're a part of, it seems more and more prevalent that there are more and more control systems associated with fear and limiting your freedoms and consumerism, which is kind of very linear as opposed to an expansive mind, you know, expansive thinking. And I don't know what you think, but it just makes me think that that's not a natural state. Compression's not, I don't think this density is necessarily natural, but it's rather a product of something else, you know?
I think it, I think you've got a perception there that I've got a feeling that, you know, this film, another film, They Live, or,
yeah,
you know, They Live, in brackets, Among Us.
Yeah, I want those glasses.
Yeah. They had this thing that was broadcasting from the TV station. And this thing was overshadowing people's perception. It was a false matrix of perception, so that the people in disguise couldn't be recognized. And when the TV station, when the aerial was blown up in the end and it stopped doing the transmission, then people were, they woke up out of the dream and they could see things for what they were and you know, banish things in the way they did. I believe that this density is also partly, the working of some kind of electromagnetic or magneto-electric transmission system that has been overlaid on us. And I think things like HARP also I mean, in one way, harp is some kind of version of that.
I mentioned this, interesting you say that, I mentioned this the other day on air, actually, and it's regarding, I don't know what, if there's a name for it or something, but often when I'm just relaxing with my eyes closed or drifting off to sleep, I will see certain colours, kind of like waves of colours going over my, in front, you know, over my eyes or wherever it is, certainly. But I started to, because I'm very experimental, so I started to follow some of these colours and see what was going on, and I decided to follow the colour purple and watch as a wave where it was going. And when I concentrated on it, I noticed as it diminished in size, it got to a point where, as soon as it got to a small point, that a scene would open up. It's like a remote viewing scene would open up. And as soon as that scene would open up, a darker force, like a swirling force, came around it and would swallow up the scene. So that I couldn't continue with what I was watching, kind of thing. Very strange stuff. But every time I was watching the purple, this dark force was swirling around the purple, almost kind of absorbing it or compressing it down someplace else. And this made me think, hold on, if this purple colour is what I'm perceiving to be very much associated with further enlightenment, if it's, you know, concentrated on, and this other force is, you know, I don't know, it just made me think of exactly what you're saying. It just didn't seem random. What I was observing, these colours I was observing, didn't seem random, because consistently this darker force came round and round the purple, and the purple dissipated. Really strange, I know. I have no explanation for it, but I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Very interesting. Because,
yeah, you know, I wouldn't bring it up unless I thought there was something to it. And like I say, every time this purple thing, it was consistently, the purple would come in, and every time the purple was involved, I'd get, you know, if I concentrate, I'd see a scene develop. You know, it's weird, man, it's weird. But there's, oh, another thing is my hearing. I did a hearing test with regards to where my hearing stopped. You know, you go up through the hearing, it was something like 17,000 kilohertz or something like that, and then my hearing would stop and I couldn't hear any further than that. Now my tinnitus.
17.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very good. How old are you?
43.
That's very good for 43. I can't hear. My hearing's so short, I can't hear anything above like 12.
But I've had tinnitus for a while, and I think it's because I'm super sensitive hearing.
Are you a musician?
Kind of. I like music. But
have you been around PA systems?
No. No.
So you haven't been experiencing loud noises?
No. But I'm very into like my music and my frequencies, that's for sure. But yeah, so I noticed, and then I checked, oh, that's right, so I went through a frequency test, and then I tried to match up my tinnitus with the frequency. And get this, my tinnitus was just before the 17,000 kilohertz. So it was just before my hearing would tail off from a frequency perspective. Something like 1650 or something, 16500.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And it was just like, hold on, is this coincidence or what? Why is that tonight is that side of, rather than the other side of my hearing ability?
That's because, I tell you why, because that's, the last time you heard that frequency was the last time you'll hear that frequency. You do get, if you lose a frequency, that's what becomes tinnitus, yeah. So it's you got a burst of that frequency, and you've gone deaf in that on that region, I'm afraid. That's what it is, and that's why you're hearing the rest of it, because it's like it's a resonance. It's like we've got a whole set in our ears. It's like one of those big chimes, the sets of chimes that percussionists have. And it's got tiny little ones, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and as you run your finger down on them, it goes, you know, that nice, pretty sound. I haven't got one. Spring! Anyway, and that's how our ears work. So when one of them's been, it's like somebody's taken a hammer to that tiny little chime, and it's just ringing all the time. It's like left off the hook, as it were.
So I'd be intrigued to know just how many people hear a consistent high frequency.
Consistently hear loads and loads of different frequencies, all the time, even as we speak.
So, I mean, is this ambient interference going on, or?
I've got an excuse. Like I said, this is how you go deaf. And, I've had this all my life, or as long as I can remember. And, I play electric guitar, and I make loud noises, and I hear them myself, and I don't wear earplugs, so that's the price you pay. It was great fun at the time, but you know.
Okay.
At the same time, I can also hear these frequencies that come in and out. I get them in left and right ear, and I also get them right in the middle. Really, really high one. Really, really, really high frequencies.
Do they just come in all of a sudden sometimes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
I try to quantify it sometimes. You know, I mean, some of my friends will, I'll be standing there and then I'll just walk over to a guitar and pluck a note. Because I try to figure out what note that frequency is. And it's different frequencies, different notes. You know, sometimes it's a D, sometimes it's a G, sometimes it's a C sharp. You know, those are different notes. So back to our atom. So our atom is comprised of little geometric forms built one inside the other. And so when you stack them, they stack according to the one inside the other. And according to the form that they make when you pop them all together. So we were talking about counter-rotation. And so I think that the proton ball, as it were, we can't say that, you know, the proton form becomes these geometric forms, one inside the other. And that the, because it goes 2, 8, 18, doesn't it? It's like the number of protons in each shell. So these shells are spinning in one direction, the electrons are spinning in the other. And so this thing becomes, as William Stillings calls it, a gravity generator. And some of them oscillate and some of them rotate. And if you combine them in the right way, once you understand the geometry of these things, you can create the gravity generator, which creates gravity. And gravity, as Stilling says, is not a force, it's a wave, and it emanates from things. So if you have something that generates gravity, it's generating levity. It's going to push away from the thing that's the other thing, the planet that is generating. And so things will start to hover. And so that's how the levitation technologies work.
Jay, it's funny as you talk, I love it. A few things came to me as you were saying. It sounds like you're saying this is a journey of, firstly, of size. You stacking is to do with growing. Size is expansion, going from tiny to larger and larger and larger until you get to the gravity. This sounds like a journey of discovery.
Yeah.
And also possible contacts.
And, also journey of evolution. So, when we're talking, because we're going back to what we were talking, what you said before, about the top of the hour, the evolution, because that's what it is. I believe evolution is the growth from one of these forms into the next stage. Remember, we were talking about the universe is scaled, right? Yeah. And, what do we also call a scale? We call this a scale. Right? And the scale has degrees. Right? This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 degrees in a scale. It's octaves. That's why it's called an octave. 8 degrees. And each degree is called an interval. Yeah? So these intervals are generated using the cycle of fifths, which goes like this. Sorry. Okay, so when you collapse all those notes together, you actually get the notes that that make the scale. So the scale that we use is harmonically related. So when we have 5 degrees of the scale, we get the pentatonic. So that's how scales are generated, and that's, and then eventually if you go further than that and take the next couple of perfect fifths, harmonics as you go up, you get the diatonics, which are the, was it diatonic? Which are actually a discord. Yeah? Those two notes are discordant with each other. In, within the diatonic scale.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say all these scales coincide with fire ratio as well, the tuning side of it. Is that right?
That's right. Well,
the stages.
Those fifths.
Spiral.
This is the spiral. Those are spirals. You can hear that. You can even hear them in your head.
Yeah.
See?
It just reminded me of a sunrise, to be honest. I'm not joking. When you're playing that, it just reminded me of a sunrise.
Yeah?
Just a castaway!
Anyway, that's all, again, these are fifths. Those are all related, a fifth to each other. So the fifth is the most perfect harmony, and that is the 1-to-2 ratio, which is Fibonacci, which is, you know, the phi ratio. And so the Nautilus shell, the spirals of nature, that represents the mother, and matter having materialized from thought. So what we've taken is the thought that comes down from the highest dimension of hydrogen and manifests all the way down into iron and thence into gold. But let's have another look at the top of the periodic table, because we got carbon, which, as Thomas was saying, 666, carbon 666, which has the atomic number of 12. You then conjugate 12 in terms of the frequencies that it makes, and that's how you get the 432 hertz scale. This pitch reference that has been altered in the last 60 years, which has caused us to become more anxious. It creates a subtle anxiety around itself. And I was talking a couple of weeks ago. I hold a jam session in my house, I was talking the other week about 432, and you know, we all tuned our guitars down, and one of them has come back to me. Came back to me a couple of days ago and just said, "This is amazing. The feelings of the music that I'm playing have completely transformed everything." So it's really gratifying actually to have this stuff reflected back to me. On a local basis, you know, because I talk about this all the time on the air and talking to everybody all over the world, but like to have somebody like in, who lives a mile away from me, you know, come and say it. That's really nice. That's really something.
Much more penetrative as well.
Yes.
And probably as a result of that, much more healing.
Mm. Yeah. Well, what it is, it's accordant. All right. So, what it is, right, okay, so if I'm playing music at 432, it's, do you remember what I was playing before when I played the two notes that were slightly different to each other?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the discord means that the 432 is in accord with our bodies, it's in accord with our feelings, it's in accord with carbon. It's in accord with the very stuff that our bodies are made of, right? It's in accord with it. And if we introduce something that is in discord with it, like 440, we get
confusion, anxiety,
dis-ease.
Yeah.
Because those low frequencies that are produced as a result of the difference between them, 8 cycles a second, that also, right? Because your body is vibrating at 432. And if I play you music at 440, that makes an 8 hertz difference. Right, and people might think, oh, what's 8 hertz? Well, 8 hertz is another discord away from the natural earth frequency of 7.43.
Yeah.
Okay. So that creates another low frequency, and again and again and again. And it's creating these sub-waves that are causing us dis-ease.
Yeah. I was just laughing because I was thinking, it seems that the discord has introduced discord.
Yeah, exactly. I read a book once that was talking about the Chinese Empire. The Chinese Empire was very strictly controlled in terms of music. And the emperor Lao Tzu, who wrote the book The Tao Te Ching,
very well said,
created a musical system based on the first 5 harmonies that didn't have that discord that I was talking about before, that I demonstrated earlier. So, you know, and we think of Chinese music, it has that, you know, it's that.
Yeah.
That's what's called a pentatonic scale. And in fact, if you're playing solos, this is what you use. These are they're harmonic. Each note I'm playing different combinations. No matter which notes you play together, they're always in harmony. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, the diatonic scale, that one, the one we're used to, has these 2 extra notes in there, which, as I demonstrate, are a discord. They're the flat and fifth. It's known as the devil's interval. Right? And it's hidden in our lovely... Yeah? It's hidden there. These discords are hidden inside the music that we're given. So really, if you really wanted to be pure, you really wanted to sonically purify yourself, you would limit yourself to music that is played at 432 hertz and is based on the pentatonic scale. Now, I have a friend. She's a fantastic singer. She's a very spontaneous singer, like... it just comes out of her. And I used to listen to the notes that she was playing, that she was singing. And what I noticed is she was like, she sang in pure pentatonics. And that's why she was, it's all very pure.
So this goes back to, you know, what I was saying about flow. There's an intrinsic flow that she was able to tap into and harmonize with, or she identified with, or intuitively understood or recognized, or all these things, you know?
Yes.
Which is fascinating, really.
Yes.
And goes to show
that
there's more than meets the eye at play here.
Yeah, more than meets the ear as well.
I mean, does an atheist need any more than what we've been talking about as evidence? Not that I give a darn about atheists.
Evidence of what?
Design. Intrinsic design.
Intrinsic design. Well, the fact that it's a hologram...
Or intelligence, maybe.
Yeah, the fact that we've discovered that it's a hologram means that somebody's made the hologram.
Right.
Here's the thing. What if that somebody is us and we've dropped ourselves into it and we've forgotten because we designed it in that we'd forget? Thomas, what do you think about that concept?
Well, I think that's a very valid concept. I would also say that, you know, there might be more fact than fiction to the whole movie Green Lantern. Sorry.
Yeah, but no. Oh, I
haven't seen it, so do you want to give me some background, or were you just being facetious?
Well, no. There were the Guardians of the Universe, and each Green Lantern was assigned a galaxy to defend, and there were well over 2,600 Green Lanterns because they were protecting over 2,600 galaxies. You might want to watch it, maybe. It's rather fascinating.
Oh, there's too many things to watch. All right, I'm going to have to get that one as well. My son's probably got that. Oh, I also discovered that my very girlfriend, indeed, bought a copy. This is unbelievable, isn't it? My very girlfriend bought a copy of John Carter of Mars just a few weeks back.
Oh, there you go.
And so we're going to have an evening in with it on Friday. I'll get the cushions out.
Jay, you mentioned about what you said. You talk about the elements. You said something. I think you said the word hierarchy. Did you? Did you use the word hierarchy?
Mm.
Or order, or something like that.
There is order. Yeah.
My question is: do you think there's some sort of hierarchical movement in the elemental table towards a particular part of the table?
That's an interesting point. There's this famous kind of I don't know, it's a meme, I'd say, that there's this thing called alchemy, which aims to turn lead into gold. Now, the main idea behind that is that we're talking about lead base. Lead is known as a base metal, and the gold is known as a noble metal, and that we're taking the base and making noble, and that's the idea of taking the base humanity and making noble out of the humanity. I just wonder if this is something to do with, it seems to me this is a bloodline activity. This is what they've been doing, all these years, messing about with this stuff. And it's something to do with making gold and having something to do with creating gold. And there's this, also this idea of certain frequencies or certain things actually create gold, or they grow gold. You can take some gold dust and it becomes gold nuggets. Where have I heard that before? I was in the source field investigations. I can't remember what it was around, though. It was this machine that this guy had. And actually, Jay Larson has been doing this, and he's been talking about using the Joe cell, which is the electrolytic HHO generator cell, that used to do the rounds on Nexus magazine in the 1990s. And the Joe cell is this thing that creates the hydroxy gas, the HHO Brown's gas, that you can use in your car engine to burn, by splitting water into hydrogen and oxygen. So it might be worthwhile having a look at the alchemy of that process in a minute. But what it seems to do is the cells are created with stainless steel cylinders. And you have positive on the outside and negative on the inside, or one or the other, I don't know. But basically one cylinder is positive, one cylinder is negative, and there's a couple of neutral ones in the middle. And this creates a flow of bubbles of gas that come off it. But something about this Joe cell, it starts self-generating, and you can then take the current away, and it'll still keep generating the HHO.
Wow.
This is something to do with the production of chi. But I don't know enough about it, but this is like, one of my guests has been talking about it, and, you see, this is what's fascinating about Journey. I have all these guests on, and everybody's got a little nugget, a little bit of the story. And so I never get all the story, but if somebody were to listen to all the shows, all the way, they get the big picture. That is the journey. The journey is from not knowing anything to knowing the big picture.
Here's a nugget for you, maybe, in that case. You mentioned chi there, just remind me of something, and you said that you're a musician. Now, from my own... experimental meanderings. I've noticed an intrinsic type of relationship or entanglement between chi and sound.
Go on.
That induces not only a higher state of consciousness that leads to a higher energetic state, but also facilitates synchronicity, immediate synchronicity. This is what I've come across anyway.
Okay, so you've just proved Tibetan Buddhism.
How?
Well, what do they do all day? They sit there all day, they go,
that was good.
A bit of electronic help there. And so they're creating a vortex. They're creating sounds. The vortex creates a vacuum which brings in chi. Is that what you're saying?
No, not quite. Not quite. Basically what I'm trying to say is that when I project my chi into sound, and not just one sound, but various frequencies of sound, mainly synthesized sounds, sorry. Although I don't see a synthetic in any way. It creates for me from a kind of, you know, it's a bit paranormal, I know, but it induces synchronicity in my environment. And the frequencies that I'm listening to themselves, like a feedback. Yeah, there's one for you.
Yeah.
There's one to cookie noodles.
I had noodle soup earlier on. There you go. More and more synchronicities. So tell us about some of the results of that experiment, and you know some of the details of please share, because we'll tell a oh no wow, it's just getting into it. Thank you very much, everybody. Great, thank you very much, Wingman. Thank you very much, Thomas Hughes, for coming on, and we've had a very, very interesting conversation. Hope you also. Thank you very much. I'll see you next week. Good night.